Hello. Welcome. Podcasting.
Yep.
Yet again.
Yeah. That's what we're doing now.
We are not in a band anymore because we can't play shows. We just do podcasts.
It's so weird. You know, I was thinking about that.
Carrying on.
I haven't been in the room with someone besides Fallon and Sean and Bruno for a month. Well, I guess besides getting groceries. But I haven't seen my friends. Yeah. It's so weird.
I know.
Since the wedding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, which was exactly a month ago.
Well.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Crazy times. Crazy times. But today we have a very cool podcast guest.
One that we've been trying to just get the time to do for, I mean, honestly, since we started.
Yeah.
The podcast.
Yeah. We have, Mr. Billy Martin from Good Charlotte, who we went on tour with them on our first album. And, I mean, we talk about it a bit, but I don't think we really got into it as much because it would be embarrassing, but I mean, they really, Good Charlotte really changed our band.
Oh yeah, completely. They taught us how to do this.
Yeah,
straight up. Like they are like, yeah. When I think about people who impacted our band from other bands, they are, you know, it's Brighton and then it's Good Charlotte.
Yeah, yeah. And they just couldn't be, I mean, you know, they're just awesome dudes. They couldn't be better. And, you know, I mean, when we went into the tour, you know, our expectations, I mean, you know, Good Charlotte is a insanely successful band, you know. I mean, when we were 15 years old, they were playing, you know, to 30,000 people a night. And having the number one song on TRL and like, yeah, the most famous band from our kind of world or just famous band at the time, you, yeah, know.
I mean, and as pop punk go, they are like one of the people that moved it in the way that it did. Like, so, yeah, much of our scene is built off of what they brought to the mainstream.
Yeah,
like I'll never 100%. Forget like watching their videos on MTV like before I go to school and be like, that's okay, like that would be cool. Like they broke down the door of this scene to like be popular to everyone.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I mean, we feel very, you know, lucky to have had that time at such a pivotal point in our band, you know. I mean, to like the first day of our album being released, being on tour with them, playing to 5,000 to 10,000 people a night, you know, was just incredible. And you know, I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but so they had a tour manager named Mark, who is an awesome guy and like just as professional and on top of it as you could ever think of someone doing any job, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like when you think of the term like professional or somebody that's on the ball with everything, this was this guy. And
yeah,
we were in Toronto, I believe, and we had gotten to the show like really late, and we're like, oh god, like we're gonna be in trouble, like we're like, you know, they're gonna have to push the concert back because of us. And we get there late, and I'm bringing in my drums, and there was a fan out out front of the line, and they asked for a picture, and I was like, can I come back in a bit, and we'll take it, because we're super late. And he was out there, and he saw it, and he heard it, and he saw me walk away, and he goes, I'll bring your drums in, go take the picture. The fans are the only reason that you're here. And like, my intentions were, I mean, I was 100% gonna go back, and yeah. I, you know, like we've always, you know, wanted to do it at whatever we could for people that are supporting us. But just to have this guy that he didn't even have to
be outside,
give us any attention or to be outside or anything, to like show like, hey, like this is how you do it. This is how you take care of people. This is how you treat people, you know. And he's bringing in my equipment into the venue so I could go take a picture with someone. And like that's just how it was on that tour. And then once our band, you know, had some success, you know, we kind of took how they did things as an inspiration, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing for love for those guys, awesome. and everyone that happened to tour with them at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a great talk.
Incredible.
Did we almost do an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. So it's a good long one with a great, great guy.
Yeah. So what have you been up to the past little bit here?
I
guess not much, I assume.
I mean, I've been learning piano. I've been trying to learn piano. So I've been sending John like really weird ambient piano things. And I've been cooking. I've been getting
nice
better at cooking. Honestly, I have no fucking idea. I have no idea what I've been doing. I've been working out.
That's just how it goes. Yeah. Dude, what kind of workout?
So Fallon is like renting her, because she'll do like spin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's those like stationary bikes. So like for like $50 a week or something, you can rent it from the studio since no one's allowed. So we grab that. And so we've been doing we'll switch off. We'll do like a half an hour on the bike and then like a full body, like no weight thing. And then,
okay.
So we'll do like an hour, but the opposite. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So she'll do a half an hour on the bike and then, yeah. So we've been doing that every morning, which has been cool. I didn't do it today, which I told her I was going to go do a run later. I don't know, man. Everything's weird. I had a really weird day yesterday. I just felt weird, strange, and like uneasy.
Mm.
So I didn't sleep very good last night.
No.
How's
everything's gonna be all right, man?
I know. How's Mama?
She's doing good. The baby slept for 5 hours in a row last night.
She slept for 5 hours in a row?
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's a big thing.
You know what's crazy?
What?
Is that the first time it's ever happened?
Oh, yeah.
That's the first time she's ever done that.
I know.
That's.
I mean, every single day there's a thing that she does.
For the first time.
For the first time. Which is
pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. Sick. Well, we will get into the episode, and we're going to keep these coming.
Yep.
But first, a message from a sponsor, and then we will get into the podcast with Billy Martin.
Cool.
Congratulations, by the way, man. It's so cool. How's all
Thank
that going?
You. It's awesome. It's obviously a big adjustment, but I'm excited about it. And it's, I mean, you obviously can't explain how incredible it is. And, you know, it's been the hardest thing and the best thing ever. And obviously, like, right now is kind of odd times. Just like, it just sucks that, like, can't have my parents, you know,
come that's hard.
And see her. And, you know, that's just,
I was thinking actually it's like probably the best time, because you're stuck at home anyways with the baby, but not having your family like that, that's got to be hard for your parents, because you only get this age once and stuff. So yeah, that sucks, man.
I'll FaceTime with my mom, and like every couple days it's like she's like in tears, because she just like, she looks so different. She woke up with a double chin, and I didn't get a hold of her, and, you know. So, but no, but I mean, yeah. As far as like not being on the road and like not recording every day, it is awesome to like be home for all those key things.
That definitely works well, you know, like. Benji's in the same boat. His daughter's 3 months now, you know, so he keeps, you know, I was just talking to him for a while last night, and he said the same thing. It's, you know, he's like, I maybe take for granted how often you, the rest of y'all had to leave your kids on tour, you know? And he was like, I didn't understand, because I wasn't a dad till now. And he was thinking like, man, there was nothing you could do to make me leave right now. And I was thinking like, yeah, I said that too, but I still did it, you know? And he was like, well, I appreciate what you guys did even more, because, you know, it's hard, so.
Yeah, I mean, how was that a hard transition for you in that? Because like, how much were you guys on the road the first couple of years? Because you had your first like just after the tour that we did with.
Yeah, I think so. Right? Yeah, like I was about to. Or
yeah.
Yeah, that was probably. I mean, we kind of had like okay timing with both of my kids. Like the heavy touring was like all before we had kids, you know. So by that point, we were still touring a lot. But there was definitely some times where I had to leave for a month, you know, like 4 weeks or something like that, where I was gone and didn't see the family. And, you know, that's hard. It's hard for you, and it's hard for, you know, the moms too, you know, because they got to do it all by themselves. So, but. It's just, you know, it changes all that stuff. You start thinking about life different, and just like grown up stuff, you know, start making different decisions and everything. It changes everything. Like it's the first thought of everything you go through your mind is how's this going to affect my family now, you know?
So,
it's crazy. But it's a good thing. It motivated me a lot too. I wanted to work harder. I wanted to like do well and succeed so that my kids would see like, oh, look at dad like doing something cool, and I'm proud of dad and stuff like so it definitely gives you like a new fire in that sense too.
Awesome. For sure, that's awesome. I'm
here with a couple cats.
Hey, you know what, I still got three cats and a dog, and I love them just the same, so you know what. It's all good. They just don't talk back, that's the difference.
Yeah.
I do. They're annoying. Man.
I was thinking about before we were gonna do this, just how when we first like went on the road with you guys, it was like for us it was at such a pivotal just such an important time for our band, where it's like our album, our first record was released the first day of that tour, and we just like we didn't have any experience, and it was like we couldn't have asked for a better band to be on tour at that time, because it's like you could see where we could have gone down one path of like, you know, once you have a little bit of success and do a headlining tour, there's one way that certain bands decide to treat the other bands and the fans. For sure. And like being out with you guys was such a awesome thing at that time, and
it changed everything. Yeah completely. Like,
was there any band or any experiences for you guys when you were first like starting that kind of like shaped what you guys became and like how you took care of other bands and stuff, or
Is it was that just kind of your natural?
Probably a little bit of both. I think naturally, you know, everybody in Good Charlotte, we pride ourselves on being just a nice band, you know? Like, I think that's important. I think it goes a long way. And in this industry is, like, you know, bands who are dicks and treat people bad, like, as soon as you know, you start going back down the ladder, no one's there to catch you anymore. So it's like,
yeah,
it's really worth it to be nice. But, you know, we did a handful of opening like spots on tour at the beginning. MXPX, we did probably 2 months with those guys, and MXPX was really, really nice, really nice to us. They treated us really well. So that's the first band that comes to mind as far as like, you know, being an older band that we looked up to, and they were really cool to us. The very, very first thing we ever did tour-wise was Eve Six. I think we might have done like 10 days on their tour or something like that, or maybe even less than that. But that was the first time we'd done any kind of touring. And those guys were super nice too. They'd come like into our dressing room and be like, hey, let's party and let's hang out. And that was cool, because a lot of bands, you know, I hear stories about bands that don't. I think we really started to see that kind of stuff when we started to do a lot of festivals and stuff like that. You'd be on, yeah, on tour, on your own tour, and everything would be cool. And then you'd hop onto a festival for one day at a tour, and all of a sudden you walk up and they're like, oh, you might be the headliner on your tour, but on this festival, your laminate doesn't do anything. Like, and the headliner of this festival is, you have to go by their rules. And I always tell the story, but I hate to say the band, but, you know, I walked in and there was pictures of the band everywhere, and it said, security, memorize these band members' faces and do not ask them for passes.
Yeah.
And I remember walking in, and this was like this band's like first album. They had one big hit on the radio, and they were like the headliners, and they were rolled in with this whole set of rules. And I remember being like, okay, that's exactly what I'm never going to do.
Totally. I mean, we've seen some of that stuff since, and every time I see it, I'm like, oh, why are you acting like this?
The whole situation was very disturbing.
Yeah,
that was a hint to you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kidding.
Oh man. that's funny. But yeah, I mean, I just remember like feeling, you know, I can remember like certain specific things, like we were like talking in the van on the
Okay.
Oh, are we good?
Yeah, we're good now.
Cool. We're in the van on the way to the first show, and we're like, we gonna like hang out with the other bands, or like they gonna meet us, or we're just like, and then the first day it's like you guys come walking in and, you know, hanging out with us, and it was like instantly like we felt like, oh, we're like, they're not acting like we're these 17-year-old kids that don't know what the hell they're doing. They're acting like we're just a band on the tour.
I remember the first day meeting you guys, and I remember meeting you like right around like the loading area on the stage, and you guys were loading in. I remember it like very clearly. I remember one morning, like Kennedy, or wait, he's Kenny now, right? Not Kennedy anymore. That I was okay. He was Kennedy back then. Okay, so Kenny, he spent the night on our bus, right? And like we were just hanging or whatever, and he probably had a couple too many, and we're like, oh, just sleep on the bus or whatever. So he fell asleep on the bus, and I woke up in the morning, and he was just asleep in the front lounge, and everybody else was sleeping. And I was like, hey, I'm going to go like walk down the street and get breakfast. Do you want to go? And he was just like, okay. And just like kind of got up, and we just rolled out of the bus and went to just some random like diner in the city and sat and had breakfast together. And then, you know, and I think about that time for some reason, when I ever think about the main, when I think about you guys, just like that instant. And, but right away off the first door, a couple of days in, we were like, man, we love these guys. You guys were all so nice. And then you stole Gary from us. So there's that whole thing.
Oh God.
And for everybody listening who doesn't realize the connection that Good Charlotte and the main has, it goes very deep. It's a strong connection. There's a mythical figure within the music industry by the name of Gary Ferencek, who is one of, you know, my most treasured and favorite friendship people on this world. I love Gary like he's, you know, part of my family. And he was with Good Charlotte since day one. He drove our van. He was our tour manager. He sold the merch. He was our sound guy. He kind of taught us the ropes when we were really young. And, you know, that sort of Gary has this sort of just motherly naturing personality. Yeah. Like he just wants to take care and help people. And I think we'd got to this point where Goodchild had kind of grown up and started, you know, having families and figured out touring. And I think Gary was, he didn't have that, like, that need for Gary to take care of us anymore. And then this young new band rolls in having no idea what to do. And he thought, these guys could use a little Gary in their life. Next thing we know, it's, hey guys, I'm going on a tour with the Maine instead. And we're like, what? Like, we're 12 years into our career. We've never done a tour without Gary. We couldn't imagine it, but it made sense. And, you know, I know that he's really, you guys feel the same way I do about him. And we're just lucky that we both had that guy in our life like that, you know?
Oh, I know. I mean, you put it exactly into words of the way we feel. It was, he, yeah, taught us everything. Just like, I mean, how you guys did. He is the thing that made us from little kids to somewhat understanding what to do. Yeah. I mean, he's amazing. Yeah.
And for us, I think we were so surprised when he was like, yeah, I'll come on tour with you guys. We're like, I mean, you have to be making so much more money with them. They've been an established band, you know, playing huge venues for
but it's not even what it's about for Gary, you know. I think it was much more fulfilling for him to do that. So
yeah,
you know, and Gary even got officiated, and he performed my wedding. He performed Paul's wedding as well. You know, I mean, he's just, so people listening know, you know, like Gary's just—he's one of those people who's, if he's in your life, you're a lucky person. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
all right. That's enough about incredible. Gary. That's all you get. No more. Yeah.
have to. He's for us. You know, we can't have him for the whole entire world. So.
Exactly.
So. I guess kind of going back to the beginning of the band, which is what now 20.
Yeah, 20 years. I think I joined Good Charlotte in 99. So 20 years now, I guess. Yeah.
Wow.
They started the band in 1996 as just a 4-piece in high school. And then I joined as a second guitar player in 99. So yeah, so they've been around for a little longer, but. And our first record came out in 2000, so we're just about at 20 years, pretty much as like, you know, a professional band.
That's so insane to like when you're looking back on it, does it feel like it's been that long, or does it, or can you remember exactly where you were in 2001, and it's like, yeah, this is just what we've been doing.
I mean, both, you know, for sure. Sometimes I look back at, you know, like I'll guess in my head, like, oh, that was probably what, like 8 or 9 years ago. And I start doing the math and I'm like 9, 10, 11, 12. Oh my gosh. Okay. That happened way longer than I remember ago. So sometimes it feels short. Sometimes it feels long, but there's certain memories that I have from early, like when things were first starting to like happen for Good Charlotte that I still remember like they were yesterday. There's plenty of things somewhere in the middle that I don't remember, you know, where like sometimes, you know, at some point the success is coming in faster than you can handle it. And life's just coming at you and you're just going through the motions. And next thing you know, a couple months went by and you've been to like 30 different countries. You spent more time on a plane than anything else. And it just all happened. So there's definitely a lot of blur memories out there, but like it's, some of it is, will always stay just fresh in your mind. And I'm just thankful, man. I know so many bands who come and go so quick, and I think we've definitely made some good decisions, some bad decisions, and luckily we've just come out on top throughout all of it somehow.
Yeah,
Pat, you guys self on the back too, man, because what you guys have done in the Maine is very unique and very specific, and from a business side, I think a lot of bands would do anything to have what you guys have. You know, you have such like a niche core thing with you and your relationship with your fans and your career. Like, you guys also should be very proud of what you've done, man, for sure.
Yeah. We feel really, really lucky.
I think, I mean, me and Pat keep having these like 30-minute conversations every day about just where everything is at right now and how crazy everything is. And we're just talking about how lucky we are that like, the people who believe in us are super, super there. And like, we know that we can, you know, in a time that's so crazy like this, like when, you know, touring can be something, I don't know, totally changed. And the fact that we have this core group of people who believe in us, it's like, oh, we're not like that worried right now. So
yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
It's a beautiful thing, man. I mean,
yeah.
The interaction between a band and its fans is priceless. And I don't think you would ever understand that until you're in the situation of a band and realizing that, like, you don't have the option to just go, like, clock in and, like, get the paycheck if you want it. Like, if the fans aren't there for you, like, it just doesn't happen. And, you know, having that type of a fan base is amazing. I think so many people would rather have, like, 10,000 hardcore fans than a million casual listeners. It's like night and day.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Because, I mean, it's just, it isn't fun to go out there. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've played countless, like, random festivals or something where it just isn't your crowd, you know.
For sure.
And the, like, difference between doing that and playing to a room that's packed out with your fans that are there to sing along to every single song is, you just can't compare the two. There's just, absolutely. There isn't. And you know, there's something I think, like, a bunch of bands that, like, that will take on tour, you know, by the time they get to their second record or something, and, you know, maybe, like, things before that had, you know, just been going up and up and up, and then they're, like, kind of at this point where it's like maybe not quite as much, which, you know, we've been through 10 different times where it's just,
oh,
up
so
and
have
down,
we, you know, like. I mean, Good Charlotte has definitely been through that. And I always call it the roller coaster. It's like you're going up, you're going up, you're going up, and you get to the top. And the first time the roller coaster starts to tip down a little bit, so many bands freak out. And they're like, we got to jump off this roller coaster before we hit the ground. But
totally.
Like, the strongest bands ride the roller coaster all the way down. And if you work really hard, the roller coaster goes back up again. You know, and the second
up is always more fun.
It is, because it's – you got to work for it. Like, sometimes the first up is just accidental. Like, you're a new thing and people aren't sure what it is, and they're checking you out because they're curious, and you're building that buzz and that momentum, but there's no floor. There's no, nothing concrete underneath of that. And like, the second time you're building it with your fans, not by yourself. And if you manage to do that, it's a whole different thing the second time.
Yeah. Was there ever a time where you guys kind of felt like, hey, like things aren't what they were at what point, like, you know, on the down for the first time, was there ever a point that you guys were considering being done with it, or were you guys always had that attitude of like, we're here for the long haul, and we're here with our fans that are gonna support us whether we have a song on the radio or not? Or
I mean, both. There was definitely times where we're like, we're fighting through this no matter what. This is what we do. And then, you know, a couple years ago, we took almost a 5-year hiatus because we got to that point where we thought, you know, this just isn't fun right now. I mean, I guess the first time for us is that, without like going through the entire history of the band, the most, I think, best thing that happened to us is our first self-titled album that came out in 2000. We didn't have a radio hit. It wasn't a smash. We didn't even go gold right away. And we felt cool because, you know, like, oh, we heard our song on the radio a couple times and we were on tour. But to the label, they were like, hey, this is like, you're on Epic Records. This is a major label. Like, we're at that point, they were dealing with like Pearl Jam, Silverchair, Incubus, Korn, like big act, rock acts. And we came out and didn't, I think, you know, we maybe sold 200,000 or 300,000, and they were like, eh, you failed. And we're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, well, that's not a hit record to them. So, but they were like, but listen, we've seen you guys live and we like it. And the label believed in us. And they said, we'll give you a chance to do a second record. So we went in to make The Young and the Hopeless with no pressure, no like, oh, we've got to follow up our last record. So we went in and did that record, and it was an awesome experience, and we felt really good about it. And then we went out on tour, on the Warped Tour, right after finishing the record. And I remember just being like, hey, the crowds are like 3 times as big as they were last year. Like, what's happening? And then all of a sudden, like, hey, your video's getting played on MTV all the time. And things started to move so quickly. But by that point, we'd already like toured in a van for 2 years. Like we had put the time in. We knew how to just get in a van and go out to merch and meet the fans every day. And like just all the stuff you do when you're like a young band. And I think those first 2 years of touring in a van, it taught us so much. So that Young and Hopeless, whatever, that record did great. It was awesome for us. We saw a new level of success we'd never had. And then the Chronicles of Life and Death was the third record, and we wanted to go a little darker. You know, I think that we had always been on that fine line of kind of pop, kind of rock, and everyone kept saying, "Oh, Good Charlotte, it's bubblegum, it's pop, it's not, they're not a real rock band." So we're like, well, we should go a little, let's go darker and kind of make the record we want on the third record. And of course the label was like, are you sure about that? And we're like, yeah, that's what we want to do. And so right away they were like, they weren't sure what the single was going to be. We thought we could go right from like doing like arena tours on the end of Young and Hopeless, take like a year off, make a record, and then just book an arena tour and go right back out. And, you know, so we went on that first run. We did like a co-headliner with Sum 41, I think. And we brought out like this huge stage production, and we were doing arenas, and it was good shows, but they weren't like sold. The other shows, we could sell an arena out like that. You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and on Young and Hopeless, we went out for that one, and we were doing 3/4 full arenas, and we were thinking, why aren't they selling out? Why aren't they full? And we realized, you know what? You took a year off. You can't just take a year off and come back and expect everything's just waiting for you. Like 100 other new bands are putting music out and your fans are finding new people. So little things like that made us realize, okay, so maybe you come back from tour and you start small and you build it back up. And just like little tiny lessons like that that you learn over the years. But a lot of bands would come out and see like a 3/4 full room and think, oh, we're already on the way out. Like we're screwed. This is done. But that's not the case. You just have to reevaluate, I guess, and think about how can we do this smarter. And so those are the kind of lessons we learned for a long time. And until we really all started having kids and getting married, and you'd go on tour and we were like bummed that we were on tour because we wanted to be home with our kids. And that was the first time we were like, okay, maybe let's take a break. Let's go like just be family guys and like figure out how to do that. And it was great because it made us miss it and appreciate it and come back to it with like a different mindset. But that was really the first time we thought maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. Like right after the Cardiology record, that was a hard like year or two of an album cycle for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine like going back to the, like when you, Young and Hopeless was out, and like, I mean, you guys got to a point right then that is, I mean, you're at the top that you can be as a band almost, you know. It's like,
it was wild, man. Yeah.
Did you guys have like on the first record, like did you have any expectations of that? Like did you guys have those dreams of like we could play in an arena, or did it just kind of happen?
We always thought since day one that like, let's be the biggest band we can be. There was never like, oh, let's just be like a cool indie band or something. Not that I don't love a lot of bands like that, but we always thought right away from day one, like we want number one song on the radio. We want big videos on MTV. We don't want to do arenas. Like we definitely had that dream. Did we know it was possible? Who knows? But yeah. I think if you don't think it, then it's impossible. You know, totally, I kind of think you have to have that like, that goal or like a dream or something like that that you're working towards, because otherwise you're not going to make the sacrifices that you do to get there.
For sure. And you know, I mean, I think that's something that like we talk about every time, or not even talk about, just like every time we go to make a record, it's like you have to feel like maybe right now could be the time where we make the biggest album that happens in the year, you know. It's like,
yeah,
if you don't go in with that kind of a headspace, and you're what's the point, you know,
to make the
best album. And
you're wasting everybody's time if that's not your mindset. You and your fans.
yeah it's awesome for sure. Making albums, you know, whatever, as you guys are making the past handful of records, do you feel like it has gotten harder to like know what to do so you don't like just repeat yourself? Or because I think for us, you know, we're like getting ready to make the eighth record, you know, and it's like
awesome.
It's exciting, but then there's just this different kind of a pressure that you just didn't have before, because it's like, well, we've done this, we've done that, like we need to do something that we haven't done. And was that kind of ever a hard thing for you guys? Or
again, yes and no. I think that it's always cool to go left when everyone thinks you're gonna go right. Like, that's how the music industry keeps moving forward and how music is just exciting, because if you make the same record over and over again, you're stuck. If you go too far away from what your fans are expecting, they're going to be let down, you know what I mean? But if you don't go far enough, then they're going to be bored. So there is always that fine line of what you can do. But for me, I think the cool thing is like, we're all fans. Like, I'm still such a fan of music. Like, I still feel like I'm 15 every time I find like a new band and I'm excited about it. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me going, is inspiration, motivation. I'll hear something that some young band's doing and I think, damn, man, like, oh, this is crazy. These kids are like 17 or 18 and they're putting this stuff out. And then I remind myself, like, you were that old when you put your first record out. Like, you were that too. But it's hard to think about it when you're not that age anymore. But I still get inspired. Like, I try to always – I feel like it's like my job to like stay current and research and know what's happening in music and know what's like young and cool, because I don't want to be one of those bands that's just like stuck in your era of music. And just making the same thing that sounds dated. But again, there's a fine line of trying to sound too hard like you're young and new and cool and giving up like what, you know, what like your band started on. But you also don't want to sound, you know, like you're stuck in the area you were successful in. So there's also that fine balance. And really, I just think if you're having fun and you love the songs and you're inspired, then you're doing something right. If you're in the studio just churning out songs because you feel like you have to and you're like, I guess these are good, then you're not doing it right. That's sort of like, you go for your gut feeling. I always think like if a song comes together really quickly and all the parts kind of just fall into place and it feels good, you're like, oh, this is good. But if you've got that one guitar riff and you're just beating it to death and you're trying a million different ways to like arrange the song and make it work and it's not happening, but you just really think there's something there, then maybe you just put that away and see if it comes back. Because I always feel like some of the like Good Charlotte's most successful songs I remember coming together just so fast.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's funny when you get in the room with each other, and like, I mean, right now we're just doing it like this. We'll have a meeting like once a week and like go over songs. But it's so funny how, you know, maybe out of 30 songs, me and Pat will have 10 of the same exact ones and feel exact same thing about it. It's just funny after so many years that you could still get in a room together and feel the same. And those ones are always the ones that like, there's something special about this one. Why does this one feel this way and this one doesn't? And it's just, it's always little tiny things, but those ones are the ones that always stick.
I agree. You know, like, and I like every band has a different dynamic, you know, and Benji and Joel, like, I always say, like, how lucky I am to be in a band with such, like, gifted songwriters. I've learned so much from them as far as melody and songwriting goes, and I've never been a lyrics guy. That's, like, really hard for me to think of lyrics and stuff like that, and the stuff that they come up with sometimes just blows my mind. I mean, that's the reason I wanted to play in Good Charlotte back when I first met those guys, is I was just blown away by the simplistic songwriting, like what they could do with three chords and a melody that would just blow my mind. I'm thinking, oh,
well,
it's
and
so
unique.
Good. It's
they're
so good.
So unique. Yeah.
And the
so
harmonies, yeah. You know, like the harmonies were great. So for us, like getting in a room and jamming is like, doesn't really work well. Like me and Paul love to do that. You know, we've had a few different drummers throughout the record. So I think something that works really well, because if we sit in a room and jam and the song isn't coming together right away, like it drives Joel crazy because he just wants to start singing. And he'll be like, oh, you're trying this weird noodly guitar thing out over there and it's not working. It's driving me nuts. And the drums are too busy here. And so like what we've really done is usually the two of them are like sitting with an acoustic guitar, like by themselves, just working out like a song, you know, like the chords, the melodies. And then they would come in and say, like, this is how we did a lot of the Young and Hopeless. They would sit in a room with the producer, just a producer, Benji and Joel, an acoustic guitar, and they would come up
with like song ideas. They would be like, okay, we've got these chords for the verse and this is the chorus and this melody. And, you know, then we'd come in and listen to it and they'd be like, oh, that's awesome. I love it. And then they'd be like, okay, cool, we're going to go. And then Benji and Joel would roll out and we'd sit in the live room with the producer and we would figure out like, okay, how could we like, what could we do to the song? We could double time this part. We could break this down. We could bring a guitar lead in over here. So we would sit and jam it out and try to work it out. And then they'd come back in and hear sort of like a finished musical arrangement and sing over top of it. And that's just kind of like how it worked for us, because a couple times we tried to all five sit in a room and jam. It was like a train wreck and no songs ever came out like that. Literally every time yeah. we tried it, not a single song came out. And it's easier to realize how your band works than to try to fight it, you know? So just totally. Over the years, figured out, okay, this is how Good Charlotte makes music and this is how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we stopped getting in a room like that, like playing loud together two records ago. We just thought it was like, you'd sit there, it'd be the same thing. It'd be like someone play a riff and you just play it over and over. And they'd be like, what are you doing? And all of a sudden it's 3 hours later and you're like, we didn't do anything.
Right. And what a waste of time.
Yeah. And we're like, okay, what's like a better use for this? And so, you know, it got to the point where John started doing a lot of stuff on Pro Tools himself. And like, so he'd come up with a basic idea. And then we'd all sit in a room and instead of like, an individual thinking about their part and what they would do, it's five people figuring out everyone's part. And I think right. that changed for the better. And it's like, it's just a one big mind instead of everyone trying to, it's like getting your ego out of the way. Be like, oh, I came with this really cool bass part. It's like, who right. cares if it's not good for the song? Right.
It doesn't work for the song. It's not cool. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's part of maturity too. Learning what works and what doesn't work. And there's some bands that I think they probably have to jam. Like that's how the ideas yeah. come out. Mm-hmm. They get in a room and just start like just making sounds and jamming and doing weird stuff. And they're like, I love that. So and you know, that's the cool thing in music. If everything was the same, it would be really boring.
Yeah, for sure. So right now you've been, I mean, well, you guys haven't put out a Good Charlotte record since, what was it? 20.
Oh, like 2 years. We put a record out 2 years ago, I guess.
20s. Yeah.
We did.
You guys played a couple dates on Warped and
on the Warped reunion. Yeah. We've done two records since the 5 year hiatus. We came back, I think, in either 2015, maybe, and we put a record out then. And then we just put another one out, I guess, in 2018 or something. Like, years go by so fast, I can't even remember, but yeah, so we've done two records since coming back. But kind of minimal touring for us. Like we realized a long time ago that we're not going to go off for 8 weeks and do like a world tour. It's just, we would literally just implode and we'd be right back to like taking a hiatus again. So we've been kind of just doing, you know, 2 to 3 weeks at a time with like a nice, you know, break in between. And it's been good. I think sometimes it hurts your touring business to not tour as hard, but it's kind of like it's this or nothing for us. Because if we went back the old way, we would just end up not doing Good Charlotte again. So,
yeah.
Well,
you've been doing a lot of comic book stuff.
Yeah, comics is what's been keeping me sane. You know, literally, I had always kind of just dabbled in comics and animation in that world. It's something I had always been really passionate about, but didn't have the time to do it because I was on tour all the time. And as soon as we decided that we were going to, you know, put Good Charlotte to sleep for a bit, I thought, okay, this is my chance to take this whole art thing really seriously. And the first year of that was me just figuring out how to get better. Cause had so many friends be like, oh man, like you're in this famous band, it'll be easy. You could go to any comic company and say, I want to make a comic. And they'll be like, sure, we'll hire you. And I kept thinking, yeah, that sounds good. But on paper, it's a different story because why are they going to hire some famous guy in a band when they've got like 100 of the best artists in the world already working for them?
Yeah.
So it was definitely like a year worth of me just like schooling myself and trying to get better and learn how to draw faster, work on deadlines and just like hone my skills. And then, yeah, after that, I probably spent about 3 years just only doing comic and animation and toy design and stuff like that. And I'm so thankful that was there for me because the whole creative outlet is everything for me. If I'm not making art or making music, I'm grumpy, you know, like I just like have to do it. So very thankful that I was able to have that too.
Yeah. That's it's just so awesome that you were have been able to find like two different things to do to make a job, but they're both just your passions. And you know, it's like
crazy.
It's insane, because you know, most people are open for that to happen, you know, one time in their life. And the fact that, you know, you now kind of have this cool thing where the band gets back together, makes a record, plays some shows, takes a break, and you can kind of do all, you know.
Which is, I mean, I pinch myself all the time and think, man, when you were like a little kid, I said, when I grow up, I'm going to be an artist and a rock star. Like, that's always what I said since I was like eight or 9 years old. You know, people be in school, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I think I used to say a singer, because I just thought like, oh, that's what you call it when you're like a famous, you know. I didn't even play an instrument or anything. Like, I'm going to be an artist and singer. And like, I think about it now, I'm like, man, you're 38 and like, you do both. Like, that's how you like pay for your life, making art and music. And it trips me out. And I'm very thankful for it. I don't take it for granted. But I also know that, like, it took hard work. There was never any just like hoping. It was always like, you know, like on tour and stuff, like in the end of the night, like everyone's like goes out, and not everybody, but most bands are partying, you know, like the night's over, and I would go sit in the back of the lounge of the bus and I'd put my headphones on and I would just be like drawing or working on something. I would set an alarm, so I wake up early on tour. I was like, I'm not going to sleep in until 2 o'clock every day. I'm going to wake up at 9 o'clock. I'm going to go drink some coffee, have my breakfast. I'm going to sit down. I'm gonna start working. And I mean, it was boring because I see everybody else having a good time, but I thought, I want it so bad. I really, really, really wanted it. And I thought, it's not gonna happen if I don't put the time in. So I did, you know. I made a lot of sacrifices to get there, and I'm thankful that I did it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, inspiring to hear, because it can get, it's so easy on tour for your day to just disappear. You know, it's absolutely. like you don't know how the day is gone, but it's over with, and you've played the show and you're like, I didn't do anything else, but I had all this time. And
I mean, I definitely had plenty of days where I was lazy and I did that, when I was just like, nah, not happening today. I just don't feel like doing anything. But it's great. It's to tour. There's so much time to kill. Like, you can make the best of that time or not. And that was definitely a mature thing in life. I'm sure when we met you guys, I probably wasn't like as focused on that, because we hadn't stopped Controlled. I kept thinking, oh, this Controlled thing's going to go forever. I don't need to worry about a backup plan. But it wasn't until it stopped that maturity set in. And then once Controlled came back, and I thought, man, I've made so much like headway in the art world that I don't want to just stop doing art. Controlled's back. I got to find a way to do both. And that's when I had to get really disciplined about my daily schedule on tour. And because by then I had been getting jobs and I had deadlines and editors from comics and stuff like waiting for me to turn stuff in. And I thought, you know, damn, how am I going to do this on tour? And yeah, it just took like routine and getting in the habit, and that was it. So
yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, how much of the artwork have you done for the band?
I did a lot early on. I think each album, like, you know, I'm sure same thing with you guys, like each album, there's like a vibe to it. Like the music dictates what the videos would look like and what the album artwork would look like. And so the only thing I really did was on our third record, The Chronicles of Life and Death. It had like we had a lot of sort of like dark sort of gothic imagery. I mean, I love Tim Burton. I mean, I have like all Nightmare Before Christmas tattoos, and Tim Burton was such a big influence for me. And the music, and the cool thing about Tim Burton I always love is that it's dark, it's spooky, it's got that gothic imagery, but it's not like all in on that side. There's always like a regular lighthearted side to it. And I felt like that's like the Good Charlotte music. Like, it was dark, but it wasn't like, you know, Cradle of Filth or something like that. You know, like, it still felt very like, you know, TRL and like regular pop music, but there was this darkness to it. And something about that Tim Burton just like felt right. So I was like, hey, what about if we had the third album like look like an old leather bound like storybook with like a little like golden seal on it, and each one of the pages of lyrics would have like a little illustration and kind of look like a little storybook. And that's something I sort of pitched the guys when we were working on it, and they were like, oh, that, you know, that really makes sense for this record. And so I did that for that record, but there hasn't been really any other opportunities where it made sense. I think so. Sometimes I'll do merch designs and stuff like that here and there. And lately I've been doing a tour poster for each tour since the band's been back. That was something I thought would be a cool thing to tie things together, is just draw something for a poster. So, yeah. So I think there's maybe four or five out for each like tour that we did, since we've been back. But that's about it. It was cool because it opened up doors for me to do like what I really wanted to do, which was comics and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Cool.
How much of your time right now is like balanced between art and then working on like production and that kind of stuff?
I mean, probably 50-50. Like, I love both so much. People ask me that kind of stuff in interviews. What would you pick more, music or art? I couldn't live without both. Maybe that's selfish or spoiled, but I love doing both. I started, I guess, maybe about same time during that break. I had stopped doing any music for a while because I was so focused on art, and it was just all about art, and I was really itching to make some music. And I love electronic music. That's always been like a huge passion for me, just like synths and keyboards. Like Depeche Mode's one of my all-time favorite bands. I love Nine Inch Nails, all that kind of like just rock mixed with electronics. So I've always sort of dabbled with programming and stuff. I've done a lot of keys and programming on all the Good Charlotte records too. So I started just making some program stuff, and I started doing a lot of beats, like a lot of hip hop kind of stuff. And so I started sending beats around to different artists, and I thought, I wondered if I could maybe kind of have like a little side hustle of just selling beats and stuff like that while I was making art. Cause with beats, it's nice because you're the whole band. It's you and your laptop. Like, you're the drummer, you're the bass player, you do the keys, your guitars, you do everything. You don't have to get a big studio, and I could do all of that. So I started sending some stuff around and meeting other producers, and I landed like a song on Lil Xan's record within like a month of sending beats around. And I thought, okay, hey, that's something, you know? And so that worked out really cool. And then I started to have other producers come to me saying, hey, would you want to play some guitar on some stuff? So I sent some guitar to Wiz Khalifa's producer. And like 2 days later, he sends me back like a song with Wiz rapping over my guitars. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy, you know? So like this producing thing could work too. But at the same time, I was like, I've already got so much time going in the art world. Do I have time to make beats too? And again, just in that like selfish nature of mine, I was like, I'm doing both because I have to do both. So
especially
I'm
if it's working.
If it's working, that's the thing, you know. So I started just doing things like what's really popular with these days is producers in the hip hop world collabing and using loops. I don't know how familiar you guys are with this world, but it's like, it's like a whole nother world. I kind of had to like dive into and research and learn about. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll sit and I'll just write like guitar parts or keyboard parts, and I'll send them out to a bunch of producers who I'm friends with in hopes that they like it, and they'll throw some drums on it, and then they'll get, you know, cause I don't really have the connections to like the hip hop world. I don't like know a lot of rappers and stuff like that. You know, you think the music industry is small, but it's not really, you know, it's kind of all separated by genre.
Yeah.
But it's been really fun because I'm just learning, and it feels fresh and feels new. So that's something I do. Like if I have a paid job to do for art, like I'll draw. But if there's no like current job, then I'm like, okay, then it's music day. So I'll make music today. So that's really kind of how I balance it. If there's a job to do, I do the job. If there's no jobs, then I make music and try to sell something from it. It's cool, man. I'm very, very, very thankful that I get to do both.
No, that's awesome. Is there any talk of getting the band back together? I mean, obviously, I guess it's gonna be a bit till anybody's doing any shows right now, so probably not the best time. But
I know that part of it is hard. So we've been definitely talking about making some new music, just like sharing files back and forth. I think now that I like actually really know what I'm doing in the studio as far as like producing and stuff, it'd be a little easier than before. So I started, like, we haven't really said anything, and I don't hate to like leak any things, but I started working on these like reimagined versions of some of the Good Charlotte hits, like sort of just like taking the tempo down a bit and like reverb drenched, like really just sort of like unplugged acoustic version, but not unplugged, more just like, you know, drum loops and keyboard bass and like really atmospheric guitars. And I started just like redoing a couple old Good Charlotte songs in this new sense. And I sat around the guys just to see what they were feeling. And the response was like, dude, these are awesome. We should totally do something with this. So I sent some stuff to Paul, and he put some bass on it, and it sounded really cool. And then sent some stuff to the Twins. So hopefully we'll, you know, little by little, just kind of get these songs going and put some music out. And hopefully that leads into just us working on new songs, but no like really hard set plans to like do a record and put it out. But we've definitely been talking to each other the last couple of weeks and sharing ideas and just, you know, throwing around that kind of stuff. Like, hey, we should use this time to do something. So not sure what it's going to be, whether it's a reimagined EP or a new record, but I think we'll definitely make some music for sure.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's awesome. Well, I know that. I mean, there's still like so many hardcore, good Charlotte fans that come out to our, you know, shows. Cause they saw us awesome. For the first time on that tour. And I just,
all the time it still happens.
Crazy. Yeah. Which is insane, you know, to think that, but I just know how excited people are like any time that you guys get things up and happening again. And we for sure need to go back on the road together at some point.
Absolutely. Or man, we would have you guys anytime,
play a couple shows at least, because
that would be so fun.
Been a long time.
Definitely would be worth it. Somehow we have to convince Gary to come back for that tour, right?
I get know. Yeah.
On the road. We'll do it. We'll tell Gary. We'll do it if you do it. That's the only way we'll do it.
All right, deal. That's awesome. Well, dude, thanks for taking the time. And
man, we've been talking about doing this for years. I'm glad we got to do it. So thank you.
Yeah, I hope all the your family's safe and healthy and.
Thank you, man. Yeah, you same with you, man. We're doing good. I'm looking forward to hearing this new Maine stuff too, man. I think this quarantine is gonna be good for all musicians. I think a lot of really great stuff's gonna come out.
Yeah, I hope so. We're just like we're itching to be able to like get in the room as a band again. So
that's not gonna happen.
We'll see how long that happens. But.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's surreal how we're living right now, but it is what it is, and it's where we're at. And I'm just trying to make the best of it, like I'm sure you guys are too. Yeah, no other choice.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
And then, Garrett, we have to have like a whole second podcast where we just talk about Star Wars one time, okay?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm down. Whenever you want.
All right, cool.
Hell yeah. Awesome, dude. Well, have a good rest of your day. And
you guys too, man.
Say hi to the dudes if you talk to them soon. And
I totally will, for sure. And you just say hi to the rest of your guys too, all right?
All righty. All right, man.
Talk to y'all soon. Thanks for having me. All right, bye.
Later.